This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega from WNYC and PRI in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
People who don't have children but want them often hear a common refrain. You can always adopt. But it's not so simple, even here in the United States. And even if you get close to finalizing an adoption, there's often no guarantee. That was the position that journalist Farai Chidea found herself in a few times. She once even brought home a baby to adopt, only to have the process fall through after the birth mother changed her mind. She had three failed adoptions before finally cutting ties with the agency she'd been using. And in the midst of the grueling and emotional process of trying to find a baby, Farai says she's found failures at every level of the confusing and expensive adoption system in the United States. And she thinks we can do better. Farai is, of course, the former host and many-time guest on The Takeaway, and she tells her story in a new essay titled Excuse Me, May I Raise Your Child? For Zora, a digital publication aimed at women of color. Farai, it's so great to have you on the show.
Tanzina, I couldn't be more grateful to be here with you. I'll say off the top that it took me 9 months from the time I wrote the first draft of this piece to the time that it came out because I just wasn't ready to talk about it.
It's not an easy thing to talk about because it brings up so many things for so many women, I think, and Americans. But it's deep. I mean, this is a serious conversation. I'm glad you're here to talk to us about it. Your essay was just searing, and I think the story that it starts off with, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, part of my backstory that I don't even get into in this article is that my mother and father were both journalists who unfortunately had real difficulties. My father left our family to go back to Zimbabwe, his home country, and try to help form media after independence. But with Robert Mugabe pushing propaganda, he ended up leaving. My mother, who had interned at the Washington Post, had a graduate degree, and also worked as a reporter in Zambia, was basically shut out of American journalism because she was a black woman with children. I mean, I'll just say it straight. And so I was desperately afraid that if I started a family, my career was over. So that's, I think, a more sort of extreme version of what so many American women go through, which is like, I'm just going to push this kid thing. I'm going to push it. I'm going to stay on my career path. And then you have other women who there's a whole lot of evidence that women with less education have babies sooner. They incur theoretically less risk to their future careers, but they are shamed when they are not upper middle income. It's like, why are you bothering having a kid? Shouldn't you be in school? And what I really point out in this article is that it's a lose-lose for everybody, that women who are working income or lower working income are kind of shamed for wanting to have children, and women who are career women are pushed to delay indefinitely. So I got caught in a squeeze play where, you know, I was seeking through the help of an adoption agency to get children from lower income and lower working income women. But in the end, they wanted to raise their children, and I respect that. I want to be clear that I am not blaming them. This country needs to support families. It's part of an overall ecosystem problem.
Now, you've had to go through this not once, but three times.
Three times.
That, I mean, I can't imagine having to do this once. Three times feels like just so much pain at that point. What happened?
Well, I had started with the New York City foster care system, and I had two friends, one of them the journalist Sheila Steinbeck, who she adopted as a single woman. Another one was a gay male couple. They adopted from a New York foster care agency where the kids had had their parental rights terminated, meaning they were truly free for adoption. I went to the same agency they went to, but then New York, like basically while I was getting certified, went through a change where it said, we will do everything to reunify children with their families. Now, theoretically, that's not bad, and I'm not judging that decision. But what happens is a lot of kids have either parents who have addiction problems or unstable families. And it's like, we're waiting for your family to get it together. We're waiting for your family to get it together. And then they get passed around from home to home, and they never find a forever home. I am very much for reunification when it works, but basically I was told, you've just got to take the luck of the draw if you go to foster care. So that was my first choice. And then I was like, oh, I will just use all my money to go get a baby who will never be taken from me. And as I say in the piece, the universe has jokes because I paid a total of over $50,000. We can go back and do the math. But these many agencies put you in contracts where they say, we can't promise you a baby, but they're licensed adoption agencies like the one I went to. So you're like, oh, well, just because it says somewhere in the contract that I'm not guaranteed a baby, that must be that's wrong because you're a licensed adoption agency. But really what they're saying is we will match you with people. And my argument is that my agency never took into account the needs of the families they matched me with. In the first case, it was a family. All of the families were on the East Coast. None of them were in New York. It was a family where there was an intergenerational family, a young woman living with her mother, already successfully raising two children, and she was pregnant with her third child. The boyfriend wanted to keep the child and told me straight up, and my mom. And he didn't have the money to do it alone. And the agency was like, oh, that's not a problem. Basically, like he has no effective rights if he can't take care of this kid. That bothered me to no extent. And I talked to the agency. And perhaps my first mistake was not pushing harder. But I mean, I didn't know what I was really getting into back then. So I knew the father was not happy. The mother said she was okay with it. Beautiful baby, happened to be multiracial black. All of the kids were black or black multiracial. And, you know, the family seemed really cool. They just really wanted the young woman in the family to get an education, to start her adult career life. But she was not some broke down sister. She was a woman who, you know, was a successful mom. I believe this agency really did terrible social work. And so in this case, my mom and I took this baby. We were, you know, bottle feeding him with formula and loving up on him. But in the end, the mother and the boyfriend decided to raise their child.
A couple things that struck me. When you were getting certified for the process to become an adoptive parent, did race factor into this? And did your marital status factor into it? Did it make it more difficult?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that overall, marital status was bigger than race. You know, I was briefly engaged once, definitely a good idea that I didn't go through with it. But, you know, so I have no regrets about that. But it is much easier to adopt if you are a heterosexual couple, and also religion, if you are Christian. I was raised Catholic. Now I'm interfaith. You know, I go to churches, I go to synagogues, but I did not want to pass myself off as a devout Christian. Maybe I should have. There's so much gamesmanship in this game. I mean, I don't really think I should have, but a lot of agencies, and it's perfectly legal to say we won't adopt to anyone who's not a devout Christian. And so one agency was good enough to say, we don't have a good enough placement rate with single women for you to go with us. I suspect that that may be true at this agency as well, but there were many times they were not truthful. About including, and I'm going to cut to some of the end, the very last placement, they did not tell me until I showed up to see the baby that the mother had revoked a previous adoption.
So, well, let's talk about that, because the adoption agencies, what's their role in doing this? I mean, you're paying these agencies. This isn't a free service. You spent $50,000 at least on trying to make this happen. What is their responsibility to you as someone who's invested money with them to make this process happen?
Well, you know, they essentially say that we're middlemen, middle women, but they also, this agency specifically and many others say that, oh, we have a birth parent side social worker and an adoptive parent side social worker. But in the end, there's a complete conflict of interest, you know, and I felt that they did not represent my needs. They concealed information from me. They did not properly counsel the families. Like if I had a family where the father, in some cases the father's not known, but the known father was like, I don't want this to go through, I probably wouldn't process that adoption match. And so I believe there are a lot of cases where agencies coerce women. They say, oh, don't you want your child to have a better life? Or, you know, this is God's will. There's all sorts of psychological games run on pregnant women and their extended families. And so basically, they're supposed to be honest brokers between the two sides. There's another path to private adoption where you get a lawyer who only represents your interest. And to be honest, unless I really had investigated an agency, I would go with a lawyer instead of an agency.
And that's an additional cost. I mean, lawyers are also not cheap, not free.
Everything costs.
Yeah. And there's the emotional toll as well, mm-hmm. right? How have you fared emotionally through this process?
I wouldn't be here without my friends and family. You know, I have wept for days at a time. When the last adoption was being processed, I was helping my mom finish downsizing her house and move into an apartment. And it was the house I grew up in. So she'd had that house for 43 years. So part of that time, I was staying in an almost empty house with like a bed and a few dishes, weeping my eyes out and driving to another state to see the baby in the neonatal intensive care unit. And I think he ended up in the NICU because his mom was working a temp job that was a heavy physical labor job until the moment she went into labor. You know, how are you supposed to incubate life under those circumstances? So, again, I have so much respect for the women who choose to put their children up for adoption, but it has to be a case of moral consent. And I'm not sure in any of these cases I have true moral consent from the families.
We talk a lot about adoption and about babies in particular, but we also hear that there are many older children who
Absolutely.
Are needing adoption. Have you ever considered that? Was that ever something that was a possibility? Did the agency ever pose that as an option?
They don't place older children, but when I went into foster care, I went into it with some great wisdom from my cousin, who adopted two children from foster care in a different state. And both of them had had challenges, which is their story. But that call you got, like that the family didn't know the challenges. I'm a single working woman. I work a lot, not too much to raise a kid, but you have to be ready to do trauma remediation. And I worried if I got a child who was enough older with enough complications in their past. My cousin was able to be a stay-at-home mom for 2 or 3 years. And really work them through their trauma and also the educational deficits they had from their childhood. I am so pro adopting an older kid, but I have to be real about what I can offer to a kid who's had severe trauma.
So I want to ask you, it's a tough question because the question is, what path forward do you take from here? I feel like we hear these a lot, oh, you can just get some donor eggs or freeze your eggs or get a surrogate. But all of these things are things that cost money. You mentioned them in your piece. It's almost like rinse, wash, repeat, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same. When is it time to think, do I continue to move forward with this? And when is it time for you to say, I don't know if this is going to happen? Are you prepared for either of those
paths? I am. And I will say that in my father's tradition, the Shona tradition from Zimbabwe, I'm already what's called a mainini or a little mother to many of my extended family. I hosted my 16-year-old goddaughter earlier this year. And so I'm kind of opening it up to faith in the universe. I'm still pursuing adoption, but if it doesn't work out, then I will auntie hard on all my godchildren and my extended family. And I auntie hard already, but I can auntie harder. But I'm still pursuing it. I'm going to see different leads. I will write a book about this. I could use the book money, should I get it, to use a private adoption. So the paths are many, and I'm not sure which one yet.
We've got about a minute left in the segment. I want to make sure we're using this time to also address what you think could be done better in this adoption system in this country.
We need a national database of adoption failure rates. We need a national database of adoption contracts to see which ones are more restrictive or abusive. Basically, we need transparency. And we also need more federal regulation. Almost everything is regulated at the state level.
And that makes it difficult for you to be able to say, where should I go and who's better? And they're really, I mean, and then at the end of the day, you've spent emotional time and money.
And I made some life choices to work lower paying jobs so that I could have more time to parent, which I never ended up doing.
Well, we'll see what happens, and we wish you all the best. Farai Chidea is a journalist and author, and her new piece on her experience with the adoption system is in Zora. It's titled, Excuse Me, May I Raise Your Child? You can find a link to that essay at thetakeaway.org. Farai, thank you so much.
Tanzina, thank you.
We heard from you all on this as well.
This is Sheila from New York City. I adopted a toddler, and I went into the process working with foster care because it was free, but also because I was willing to be flexible and expected literally the worst. But I got a golden child, a great young man who's now in college, and I'd recommend it highly for people as long as they bring patience and an understanding of the need for flexibility.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth. I'm calling from San Diego, California. Of the children we have cared for in foster care in the United States, we have adopted two of them. I think more services for families and children who are in crisis are essential. As an adoptive parent, we had a good, albeit stressful, experience as our children worked their ways through the system.
Most of my friends have tried and had terrible experiences, and several of them have actually ended up pulling out of the foster to adopt system entirely after experiencing some pretty serious trauma. I'm so happy you're talking about this. Our system is terrible, and so many children and families are suffering because of it. My name is Monica, and I'm calling from Oregon.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm calling from Texas. I have permanent managing conservatorship of a child. She was our foster child, but at the time, limit was up on her case, and it became very evident that her parents were still unfit. However, the estate refused to pursue termination. So now we live in this very strange land of no man's land. This weird compromise the state is trying to create is miserable. I wish the adoption system would actually consider what's best for the child.
My name is Jordan. I'm from Texas. As far as adoption at birth, it has become a business. Private adoption ranges anywhere from $15,000 to $60,000. For foster adoption, my husband and I had a failed foster adoption last year. There are ways for these family members to buy time, do the minimum that is expected, and things are pushed back. These kids are in limbo for far too long. If they have an investigation, they're able to move states, and a new investigation has to be opened up in their new state, and so that buys them even more time. Kids will stay with hurtful, neglectful family for years.
Hi, this is Karen calling from Massachusetts. We adopted an almost 9-year-old from Child Protective Services many years ago. She's an adult now, and we certainly love her very much, but they really were not truthful about the trauma and abuse in her background, and we probably didn't get her the supports she deserved because we didn't know, and she wasn't talking about it. What I would ask is that they require truthfulness from agencies because it's not fair to the child to not have what he or she needs to grow and develop as best he or she can.
Always appreciate when you all share your stories with us. You can give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.